My name's Mary Hughes, and part of Local Color Live is not only having regional music play there at New Mountain in Asheville, but to also connect and talk with local businesses that have an impact on our community. And we have Brent Manning, who is, are you the head of Riverbend Malt House?
I'm one of the founders. Myself and Brian Simpson started Riverbend back in 2010.
Great. Now, it seems kind of evident what you guys would be doing, but just for the listeners out there, what does Riverbend Malt House, what is your primary work?
Yeah, so absolutely. So we make artisan malt using ingredients that are sourced within a 500-mile radius of Asheville. That's special because not only of how we produce it, we use an old-world style of production called floor malting, which dates back to the 1700s, the way they used to make malt for the Scotch whiskey industry. And then the regional nature of our grain sourcing is different. A vast majority of the raw materials and that go into making craft beer are sourced from Western U.S., Western Canada, and Western Europe. Well, so we're really shrinking the footprint.
I was kind of curious, what made you decide to go that route as opposed to perhaps what other breweries and places might be doing?
Well, it's funny to think about it now, but 5 years ago we thought Asheville has enough breweries, so we need, how about a malt house? We were very, our tagline is malt with a mission, and that mission is to connect the farmers to this craft beer industry. And the malt house is that key link in the chain that had basically fallen by the wayside as larger entities had consolidated and prohibition occurred. Mm-hmm. And all of those things basically meant that all of the malt was being made in about six locations in the U.S. When we started, there were three craft malt houses, and now there are over 50. So there's a real movement building.
Well, yeah, I was about to ask, you know, like what the climate was when you actually started, but that right there kind of answered it. Was
absolutely,
you were kind of at the start.
Yes, it was. There was one group in Massachusetts called Valley Malt, and then Colorado Malting Company, just south of Golden, Colorado, and we were the only folks having the conversation at that point. How do we do this? Where's the equipment, and where do I go to learn how to make malt?
So where did you go to learn?
we actually were the first students at the Canadian Malting Barley Technical Center. It's located in Winnipeg, Canada, and I literally looked all over the world trying to find a malting class. Both Brian and myself have a strong educational background. He's got a master's in geology. I have a master's in marine science. And so we knew we were going to come at this from a scientific slant. And we felt it was just absolutely essential to have an academic background in malting before launching the business.
And what was the initial response here in the Asheville community when you guys started off?
It was good. We had a really warm welcome. We had a lot of guys wanting to come in and see what we were doing, which was pretty hilarious. We were in 2,000 square feet. We were just getting started. We were doing 1,500-pound batches. And really, and just to put that in perspective, 1,500 pounds of malt may sound like a good bit, but you need 2 pounds of malt to make 1 gallon of beer.
Oh, so, wow.
And we should probably back up and explain what malting is,
yes,
too,
please
as
do.
Well. Yeah.
Yes.
So malting, it is possible to make alcoholic beverages with raw materials, raw grain. But we take barley, wheat, and rye and walk it through a three-step process, steeping, germinating, and kilning. And all of that is designed to manage the enzymatic digestion of the cell walls inside each kernel into a starch or simple sugar, which is then easily extracted by the brewer or distiller that purchases it.
Wow. See, okay, that I would have never known this about the process that actually goes into making
absolutely
a malt drink.
So
yeah.
we always have a lot of fun with it. You know, everyone knows that their favorite hop variety in their IPA, but malt was sort of, we refer to it as kind of like the rhythm section of beer. You know, you can have, you really can't go anywhere without a solid rhythm section. So you need strong malt backbone inside of each beer recipe. It's not just the sexy hop varieties that get the front page news.
Yeah.
You need good malt with it as well.
Oh, that's fantastic. So what you were saying there about drawing from local farms and locally sourced ingredients.
Absolutely.
Explain a little bit of how that works, how you work with the local element in all of this.
Yeah, so it's a big shift. What we're trying to do is pull farmers out of the what we refer to as the commodity loop, which is basically they are beholden to international geopolitical events that can and climatic events that can negatively or positively impact their take-home pay. From our perspective, we like to work on a contract model where we agree on a price that makes sense for them, obviously gives them the equivalent of a living wage, let's say. We agree on that price in October, and the grain is not harvested until June. So they get peace of mind, we get peace of mind. They, at least for that little portion of the fee, their operation, they know what their take-home pay is, and that's a huge departure from the commodity roller coaster.
Well, that's what I was thinking, is that's probably a rarity out there.
It is, yeah. And there's cyclical things, even without geopolitical events, there's cyclical events during the year where corn prices drop, and mm-hmm. so barley picks up a little bit, and vice versa. It's unnecessary from our perspective to introduce all that variability, because that would mean variability in our finished product price as well. And so it just simplifies the whole deal from the farmer to the brewer that we work with this contract-based model.
Yeah, and the fact that that was kind of a set idea of what you wanted to do when you started Riverbend.
Absolutely.
That's even better in my mind.
Yeah, both Brian and myself are you know, a couple of generations off the farm, so not so disconnected from it that we don't remember, you know, how hard it is to be a farmer in this day and age. And so we're really trying to craft beer in North Carolina, the most recent data, which doesn't even really capture the full impact of the big three, Sierra, New Belgium, and Oscar Blues, it's a $1 billion industry. And without all the links in the chain, malt house included, the farmer is not a part of that economic engine. And so we really wanted to see that happen.
And I'm assuming that means you fostered some pretty good relationships with these farmers. What's their take on all of this? What's their input?
Yeah, we've been learning together. I'll say that. We grew a lot of feed barley in North Carolina, 20,000 acres typically. But this is typically, not to get too wonky on the beer science, but it's high protein barley, which creates poor quality beer. So we had to work with them to different strategies of growing small grains so that the protein comes down, the plumpness of the kernel comes up, and the cleaning of the grain. We're talking about, this is a food grade product they're moving around now. So it's a different set of handling instructions. So there were a lot of those things that we had to work together on, ourselves included, trying to figure out. To try to cover that and capture those extra headaches, we do pay a considerable premium over the feed grade price.
Well, and, you know, first off, I wanted to say, I think WNCW listeners would be fans of beer science, in my opinion. That's my thought. But
sure.
I like the fact that it, you know, coming from your own background, like you're saying, not too far off the farm yourself, and that the recognition that you have to do a bit more and pay a bit more and be a bit more conscientious, not just to get a good product, but to sort of, it's almost like paying it back or paying it forward, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and they thought we were kind of crazy at first. You know, we were offering a good price, but they still didn't understand that we were going to stick to that regardless of what the markets were saying. And then, you know, We've lost a couple due to our quality control. You know, we have to, I mean, there's certain things that we cannot let the barley in the door if it's above X threshold on a certain test. So there's been some things, you know, some exchanges less than optimal, but you know, a learning opportunity is what we try to see it as, and get everybody. I just got back from a conference in Richmond, Virginia, that was aimed at doing just that. You know, bringing growers in a kind of a roundtable discussion, which varieties work best, what planting dates work best, you know, fertilization regime, all those things. So it's been good. We've had strong partners on the ag extension side of things too. So we early on reached out to NC State and USDA, and now include conversations with Virginia Tech as well, when it comes to, you know, helping. So Virginia Tech and NC State are actually developing the next varieties that we will use in the malt house. And so they are plant breeding, but it is non-GMO plant breeding.
Right.
So I always specify that because I know plant breeding sends up a red flag.
Right.
Monsanto must be involved.
Oh, no.
But that is not the case. These are publicly available varieties that are basically made the old-fashioned way, hybridization.
Yeah.
So it's been really fun to be a part of those conversations and, you know, help. You know, we really want flavor to be a part of the conversation moving forward. You know, the other goal we have is to play some small role in the development of a regional style beer. You know, something that is
something particular
that
to
you
this,
think
yeah.
of when you're when I mean when you go to Southern California, you know you're going to drink big, you know, hoppy double IPAs, right? And when you go to the Pacific Northwest, you know the black IPAs are going to be on the menu. But when you come to Asheville, there isn't really a distinctive, you know, I really love a lot of our farmhouse style breweries are doing some pretty amazing things mm-hmm. here. And who knows, maybe that is what we're going to be known for is,
right.
you know, you go to Asheville and Western North Carolina to drink beer with random things that have been put in it. You know, I don't know. Be it squash or nutmeg or, you know, peanut
yeah.
butter, who knows?
Yeah.
But hopefully the malt character will come through in that conversation as well, because we are using varieties that are not being brewed with anywhere else.
Right.
And so that's pretty special.
It's kind of like putting your stamp on not just the product, but the area with which.
Exactly. The terroir concept
right.
is what
right.
we're hoping to, you know, accentuate.
That's great. And in now that, you know, kind of getting an idea of the work you are doing as far as like there mm-hmm. and working with the farmers and really the amount of science and education that goes into making this happen, how have you turned that around just into the community of Asheville itself as far as like the work you do?
Yeah. You know, we've got a lot of great brewing partners here that we, you know, try to co-brand with. We try to work together, you know, co-sponsor events. One of our favorites is Feast underneath
right.
the Slow Food Asheville umbrella. We're a part of their Feasting for Feast event every year. We work with Oyster House over in West Asheville to brew a special beer for that event. So, you know, just fun projects like that. It's been, the beer community is fantastic. it's a great group to be a part of. And it's, you know, we always joke, there's a lot of high fives and hugs. And so that we're excited to play along.
The camaraderie.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You know, the rising tide that lifts all boats. I mean, everyone sort of realizes
what a great,
that.
Yeah, that's a great phrase to kind of think about in terms of this, because that, you know, Asheville, it's bigger than, of course, when I was younger. I've been in this area my whole life pretty much, and so it's grown so much, but it's nice to see that a community spirit is still a big part of the city.
Absolutely. Yeah. To that end, another really cool thing, the Greenways project, the Brewing for Greenways with Buncombe Connect is just a really neat example of
yeah.
that. So what's been happening with that is, you know, basically two breweries team up. We work with Wicked Weed on a beer. They pass the baton to Burial and Wedge. And the next one coming up next Friday on the 13th is High Wire and a whole slew of partners. They're working with Ben's Tune Up and French Broad Chocolate and just a really cool porter that's coming out with that. So just tons of stuff. A portion of every sale goes to support the greenways, connecting
cool.
all these different sections that have been built, but they're still sort of isolated. Right. The goal is to help, you know, really have a cohesive network in the future.
And so would you say that between creating a regional, you know, kind of a regional stamp that the Riverbend can have a part in and giving back to the community, do you feel like you have fulfilled what you've set out to do in a lot of ways?
Yeah, I think there's definitely more work to be done. I think as we grow in the future, the economic impact is going to be something special. We're contracting a couple hundred acres right now. As we grow, that number is going to grow. That means more farmers have the opportunity to get involved. I'm also part of the Craft Maltsters Guild, which is a trade association, and that group is really also trying to diversify their ranks and get people of different ethnicities and age groups. You know, we want to open this door and show people that craft beer can be all inclusive, really,
and be an
economic engine for a lot of different size towns in a lot of different locations.
Well, that's great. Well, I love the fact, I like the fact that you're connected with the farmers so pointedly.
Absolutely.
And that, you know, you're shortening the gap between seller and grower. And yeah. I think that's a great thing to have be a part of the Asheville community.
Definitely.
So that's awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you guys.